I'm going to do a little exercise with you guys here that I did with John the other night. I was pointing out some things. Now, none of this is intentional. One of them is intentional. If everyone can go to thesyncbook.com and then click on the books button, right? And that'll give you the 8 titles we currently have available. And the only thing that's intentional here is Sync Book 1 and Sync Book 2, right? Is we basically, it's like the inverse. One is black with white text, the other is white with black text, right? That's intentional. But let's kind of, I could say why all of this is unintentional. I could explain that all the different artists who worked on things and the different timings of stuff. But just for shits and giggles, look at the fact that Accidental Initiations and Winter's Labyrinth both were basically being written at the same time. Yes, Justin Morgan did design both covers, but they're based on the books and the designs that he came up with the people, with Andras and Doug respectively. Both books have a tree on the cover. One is a literal tree, that is the main focal point of Winter's Labyrinth book, and the other is the Tree of Life, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, right? So both those books. You can see very clearly the Yogic Gospel of Thomas and Baruch's book, both are, and actually this isn't even the real cover to Baruch's book. Baruch's book is solid red with just the snake. And we have a red book cover with a snake on it.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Two books, both red covers with a snake.
Trippy.
Right? Now look at Astro Music and Dog Park. Here we have the earth, that sort of gray earth, and the clouds above it, right? If it's almost again, these are all almost the exact same book cover, doubled.
Totally.
Right? Now, if you go click the radio button, okay, 42 minutes, he used the iTunes Sync logo, those two arrows pointing at each other, that was something that Doug wanted, which is like an MP3, it's the iTunes MP3 player, always record is the classic tape deck.
Right.
Right? Synchronize. I made that logo is orange text with white highlighted text and a clock. Marty makes his logo with white text, orange highlighted text, and so unsynchronized is literally a 60-second clock, 60-second stopwatch to point to the hour. Here it's literally the radio hour. And then if you look, John's brother Thomas made a logo for their new show Pentimental, and Ezra made a logo for his new show Astro Music. Both of them sent these to me on the same day. Okay, not speaking to each other.
Right.
Here you have this 5-pointed flower.
Oh yeah, then you have the fucking Rosicrucian rose in the center.
All right, he's playing. So Ezra's playing off the Rosicrucian rose in the center, puts that as the framing center for his tone color alchemy wheel. So you have the 5-petaled lotus, right? The 5-petaled flower. Both there's 5 red petals and there's 5 green leaves making that. Now look at Thomas's Pentimental logo. You see the pentagons, 5 pentagons making the star in the center.
Totally.
Both looking very flowery. Both playing off those 5s. So what I'm saying is, I'm from a vantage point where I see this happening so often. Now, like I said, someone might come across and be like, oh, this is fucking intentional. I guess I wanted to point this out because I think it's really fun,
dude.
And also because I know it's not intentional.
Yeah, I gotta tell you something, dude.
Yeah.
I fucking looked at a sketchbook recently when I was moving, and I came across a drawing I did in 1996, and in the drawing, there's fucking, there's 2 skyscrapers. And there's a phone in front of them, and out of the phone is a fucking bubble that just says 9/11 exclamation point. And then there's a fucking nuclear bomb going off, and I got, if you saw this, dude, it would trip you out. Because it's fucking weird. It's
it sounds.
Dude, yeah. I fucking drew two skyscrapers and I had a, like, 9/11 in front of the towers. So it's, like, right there. Super fucking weird. 1996. Totally unrelated to thinking about the Trade Center at the time, but I drew this drawing when I was, you know, in a state. And I completely forgot about it. I went back and I was like, flipping through it as I was moving. And I was like, really? And so you never know.
Yeah, I'm finding revisiting old drawings is very fun. Even, like, I'm revisiting, like, my time in high school and, like, what I just fucking, like, doodled on my page while not listening.
Yeah, this was in class. I mean, this was a...
Yeah, man. It's like, oh, you're projecting all the shit that you're going to be into later. It's, like, just little symbol stuff. Like, I'm drawing little nodes that are reminiscent of, like, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, or I'm obsessed with these swirl shapes and I'm or arranging them into... like lattice structure of swirls and for no apparent reason.
Yeah. I found a drawing from like 1994 with an eclipse with a door inside that says 237, you know?
It's like, yeah, it's, you know, you're not, again, I don't think I'm fucking psychic, but everyone kind of is a little bit in their own subconscious in the way, however we're tapping into it, you know? Sure. The more you defocalize, I guess the more it comes.
But this is the nature of non-local language, right? Is that...
Yeah.
Non-local language, we are drowning in non-local language. If we just had the perspective, we could tune into it and translate it. The fact is that 99.9999% of it is untranslatable. The miracle is that 0.00001 is translatable. Therein lays our strange attractor, our doorway to the mystery. And I'll go back to this one more time, just for one final time, just to get your comments on it. But this is just basically rock solid for me. You know, Robert Anton Wilson and his mom with the Ouija board, they ask the question, when will the war end? They write a date on it. They forget about the Ouija board. They pull it out years later, and they see the question and the date. And the date is the exact date that World War II ends. And this... you know, is a nuclear bomb that goes off in Wilson's head. It just, he's an Irish Catholic, and this is not what he should be experiencing right now. And it's this breakthrough moment. But what he does is he frames it in two ways. He says the one way is that the Ouija board worked. You know, the spirits or the non-local language came through, heard the exact question, saw the future, and gave the date. The other reality he posits is there are 500,000 Ouija boards in America at that time. Every single person asked that question, and maybe 2,000 people got this date. So there's a perspective beyond a veil where this thing that he wrote on the piece of paper is just a 0.1% of what could have gotten out of 500,000 queries of the Ouija board. By math standards, if non-locality is happening, everyone who asked that question, the Ouija board should have done its job and given the exact same date. But what really Ouija boards are is just a very clunky, archaic, non-local generator, and it spit out all this non-local language. Just one of the fragments happened to ring through clear, have that resonance. So underneath one veil, you have the kid seeing the answer, feeling the magic. Beyond another veil, there's an indifferent, cold, scientific universe. The reality is that both of these universes exist at the same time. That in this incarnation, we live in two different realities at minimum. There's probably many more. But these are just two very understandable realities that we can weigh against each other. The fact of the matter is, you don't say it's all science and it's all cold because you deny that kid that breakthrough experience. But you don't say it's all magic because then people say, well, how come Bobby Wilson got the right answer and I didn't? And Bobby Wilson figures because he's touched by God, and then you have all of human history. It's a balancing of these two things. So, you know, how many kids in their book have a doodle just like David does?
Well, sure. I mean, of course, right? But we're talking about, okay, we're talking about synchronicity, too, okay? And it's, this has come up before where, okay, everything that can happen does happen, all right? That is the skeptical catch-all. And I'm not going to have this conversation here because it would be too long and I couldn't do it justice because I'd have to review the subject myself, but statistics has is not the final word on the nature of synchronicity, and other people that have treated it scientifically or evaluated it. He even said as much, that statistics relies on very specific parameters, right? Okay, and synchronicity actually violates some of those parameters. So to apply a tool set to a phenomenon that goes beyond that, it becomes reductionist to the point of saying, well, yeah, in one sense, that's not wrong, and obviously many coincidences, et cetera, can be explained away like that. But if we accept that human perception and human consciousness is a quote-unquote ontological reality, it's a real thing, it's not some illusion generated by our brain, then meaning, when we have a coincidence that has overwhelming meaning to us, then that is an ontological reality. That is a real thing. That is, again, not definable by statistics, not definable by any reductionist paradigm that we know of. Maybe we'll find it in 1,000 years if we don't blow ourselves up first. But if we keep going on this path, I don't think we'll get there anyway to find out. So that's my, I guess, my piece on that. If that makes any sense. Yeah.
Well, I think that this is the vesica piscis, right? That we exist in that middle ground. But the fact of the matter is, if you can remove your human ego and allow these two separate spheres to have a totality of existence, then you can start to begin, I think, to grasp what is going on here and why people fall so wholeheartedly into these separate camps. And you have these skeptics and you have these mystics. The thing is that they both are responding and resonating with very real spheres, with very real centers. But the thing is that what's happening is in that overlap, in that middle.
Right. The best right. mystics are skeptics who don't allow their skepticism to keep them from exploring deeper.
Right. Yeah. It's understanding your fundamental tools that you're applying to any kind of situation, right? And you're trying to tease something out.
Yeah.
Again, if you're going to say, oh, the statistics covers that, well, okay, do you really know the foundations of, you know, the parameters of what goes into evaluating a subject? It's not actually as simple as people want things to be. And so that requires actually reading about these things. And that's not, I certainly have not read every subject and never will and cannot. And I understand people's attention's limited. But to have a strong opinion on anything without at least, I don't know, having some understanding of the foundations, then you're not being serious. You're pretending, I guess. That might be kind of harsh, but.
Yeah.
I just want to sort of point out, I saw you sort of poking a stick on Facebook at Anthony Peak last week. And I don't mean to keep making you the
Oh, I that. I fucking had enough of that shit. That just honestly, I like, yeah, keep going, but Jesus Christ.
No, so like I said, I don't spend a tremendous amount of time on Facebook, and when I do, I usually see that, and it's weird because like I said, I don't think that's all you do, but it's certainly noticeable to me, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I'm sure you'll end up pissing off a bunch of people, but people always find ways of getting people pissed at them, so it doesn't matter.
Tell me about it.
You know, I try to be a nice guy and I piss people off. You might as well, you know, do what you do. Anyway, what'd you say?
I said, aha!
No, but I'm saying, like, I think it's all good. I guess my point was, I think you were poking a stick at his online persona less than you were necessarily poking a stick at his work, let's say. Right? I think that's fair to say. And,
correct. Absolutely.
Right. So it's like, hey man, you're fucking brilliant. Get the fuck off Facebook and do your brilliant work. And stop whining on Facebook. Like you should be, you know, the alchemist has to go into the womb and work. Anyway, he, in his SyncBook 2 chapter, he addresses what would be comparable to the Robert Anton Wilson example, right? He talks about this idea of the law of large numbers, and this is the skeptic's sort of swipe at the statistical approach of how those dreams or... So in the Anthony Peake talks about it as precognitive dreams, which we can equate to being statistically equivalent to a Ouija board answer, right? You're saying if 50,000 people have Ouija boards, they're all going to get different dates, yes? And we could say the point is 50,000 people each have a dream. How many of them turn out to be precognitive? And they're basically what he does, and I think there's actually a really interesting reasoning here, is he's saying if the statistical approach to that is to say that if everybody did a Ouija board, not everyone's going to get the right answer, and you're going to get buried in the statistics. He's saying, but that also means, the inverse of that means that every night, millions of people are having incredibly accurate precognitive dreams, right? So there is, it's again, as you say, both sides of this are grasping something that's very real, is that, yes, statistically, and to be somewhat scientifically grounded, et cetera, to be skeptical, is to say, hey, not everyone's getting the right Ouija board answer. And that's a legitimate criticism of, you know, if we're going to say, hey, Ouija boards tell the future. It's like, well, no, actually they don't. They just did in this case. We, in the same way, we don't jump up and down and go, holy shit, dreams tell the future, because I might not, you know, eat a squid French fry tomorrow just because I dreamed it or something. But the point is, and I think it's a very, again, but a very legitimate point, and not to be picking sides, really to emphasize your point, is that both sides are grasping something very real. And the flip side of that statistics is what Anthony Peake points out, is that to argue with statistics and the law of large numbers actually means to give credence to the fact that on a regular basis, there are millions and millions and millions of hyper-accurate dream predictions. Yeah. I just think that's really...
I agree completely.
Felt like it was important to point out.
Totally. Yeah, and it's a reality tunnel thing, right? So... And it's just about understanding that each has its limits. And to say, like I just mentioned, like, why have you, like, a serious hard line on one or the other? Because it can always be argued the other way in a lot of these instances. And then we have to come back to, again, human experience and shared amongst each other and also just in our own personal lives and how we interpret that. And I don't know, it's just such a it's so long of a tradition in the human experience that it's not just some aberration of Western culture. It's not just some aberration. It's shown to be actually quite constructive. So in a sense, evolutionarily speaking, it's like, okay, it has some kind of purpose. It seems to keep people coherent. It seems to keep people united. Isn't that what evolution is all about, is cooperation? So to deny it is like... not existing is also to misunderstand human nature and the nature of evolution, because aren't we all tricked to believe that it's all fucking, you know, slit the other guy's throat so you can have the biggest house? And we forget the cooperative aspect. So,
John, I think you've been reading too much Unabomber if you think you have to slit someone's throat to get a house.
Just kidding. No, I got you. But I think you get where I'm going with this.
Totally. Right?
Completely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I read Mein Kampf, but I didn't walk away from that feeling too much resonance for the guy.
No, and that's the thing. But you know what? Like, I look at him, like, okay, well, he's a product of something, but at the same time, he made horrible and is an evil man, you know. So it's like, but it's also understanding that, again, where do people come from and how do people develop and all that, and it doesn't mean being an apologist for somebody or something, like, you know who, but. It means just understanding the human experience. It's psychologically irresponsible not to try to dig into that, I think.
Totally.
If one were to get into this, would it be easier to be, in this day and age, and maybe there's no either or on this, but if one were to be indoctrinated into a mystic sort of viewpoint of the universe, or indoctrinated early in a skeptical universe, do you think that one leaning or one indoctrination prepares one's brain and mind to be best prepared for this sort of awakening into a non-local existence where ego really is superfluous, right? Where you find out that you aren't the center. You might not even exist. Is there a right way and a wrong way to bring someone up to be primed for this sort of awakening or this sort of realization, or how to best process synchronistic events?
So there's the Robert Anton Wilson, you know, idea of katmas as opposed to dogmas.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, he's referring actually to Discordians, but it's the idea that, right, dogmas take an official position, right? That's dogma. He's like, you know, we as Discordians, we have katmas, and a cat sometimes is friendly and sometimes isn't and sometimes is this, and it's like, some days I think reptilians are real, and some days I think that's crazy, batshit crazy. You know, it's like, whatever it is. So it's like, he's saying katmas help. Now, I think if there's a right way and a wrong way, I think that's, I would probably lean towards that being the more right way, but I also think that time will tell. I don't know that we've seen a generation raised on katmas. You know, what would that bring? But when you're asking the religious indoctrination versus the quote-unquote skeptical indoctrination, I don't see a difference. I grew up in New York, which is super, like, atheist, liberal city. And now I'm living in Virginia, which is, like, the exact opposite, you know, super conservative, militaristic, God and country type place, right? It's like fucking, you know, night and day. They're both terrifying realities in the sense of super closed-minded and super elitist. Like, if I'm in New York and talking to, like, people I went to high school with, they look down on religious people like the slum of the earth. These fucking idiots, yeah. You know, think that, you know,
yeah.
Oh, they believe Sky Man comes down and whatever, whatever. You know, it's like really, it really is an elitist mindset. And yet, being here in Virginia, I mean, that's the same damn shit, you know, like, we saw the girl who decided to kill herself. There was this little thing that went around the internet today. I saw was Christians criticizing her. Like, I hope she goes to hell because she committed suicide, right? And it's like, that's not very Christian of you. These sorts of things are way more prevalent than not. So there is. People get so ground in their mindset of what's right and what's wrong. It's very hard for me to see a distinction between the two. I just have so much experience in both realms at this point that I find more often than not, it's the exact same experience, just from a different side of the coin. I had a friend who, when we put out Andras's Accidental Initiations book, I had a friend that I went to high school with, and I saw him and I gave him the book, and he read the first page, which the book is not about Freemasonry, but Andras points out that at the base of this Kabbalistic tree, there's actually a plaque that says, placed here by the Freemasons, right? So he just says, there's this plaque that says it was placed there by the Freemasons. This guy read like the first page and a half and said, oh, it talks about Freemasons. I don't believe in all that shit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was enough for him to assume it's about conspiracy theories and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, you don't believe in Freemasons. Like, it's a real organization. You know, like, what? And then, you know, said something, got into conversation, said something about synchronicity, and he said, well, I don't believe that synchronicity is real. Like, okay, like, so like he doesn't believe in it as a phenomenon.
Right. So again, conditioning, dude. That's good. That's incredible that we've gotten that things have gotten to that point. Congratulations.
Right.
I mean, that was the aim, right? I mean, that's talk about like, you know, public relations. Jesus Christ.
It's people police themselves.
Yeah, people police themselves. You're like, oh, you're talking about some high weirdness? So
yeah, like no one has to supervise, no one has to spy on you, no one has to fucking come and bust your door down. Everyone just knows everyone gets policed by everyone else and these like feedback mechanisms that are just like totally destructive to everybody. Just like on the point that you're talking about, Ellen, like my girlfriend put up a post just asking like on Yahoo Answers or something, just a really innocent, really non-leading question like, hey, you know, a lot of my kids are interested in like secret society crap. Like, are there any young adult novels that like focus on that, you know, like Freemason kind of stupidity? And like the responses were really indignant. Like, you're irresponsible for like wanting to introduce your kids to this. Blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, what is this shit? Like, really venomous trolling kind of stuff. And that's what makes you look at the internet and be like, what the fuck is this? You know, what are we doing with this? But then there's stuff that we do with it that I think is much better, and how people consume it is much more productive and constructive. But God almighty, well, it's like, again, this fascist fucking heads up.
But just, you know, be careful. And we're all guilty of it. I'm just saying, be careful there. And he's like, the way we do it is maybe better. It's like, I sure fucking hope you're right, but just, you know, for what it's worth, just that's, I think there's a potential pitfall right there, right? It's the same way that the skeptical atheist says, well, we do it right. We look at the same data and we're smart because we're using science. And then the you know, fundamentalist says, well, we're looking at the same data, but we do it right. Or better, or whatever, because we got faith, or whatever.
I'm completely agreeing with you. I don't know. Sorry if I came off as disagreeing or saying something different, but I was trying to reinforce that exact thing. So yeah, I agree.
Oh,
I wonder if you think this way, and oddly enough, it points back to a piece by Androff Jones. Much like there's institutional racism, people say racism is over, but people don't understand that it's ingrained in our institutions, in our systems, just the way things are set up, that there are these remnants of racism that form and drive our culture that on some level structurally we need to tear down and rebuild anew. Like Andras's piece on We're All Just a Bunch of Jews, I think he's correct in that viewpoint, in that, you know, we live in a country that is an amalgamation of Judaic roots. And it might be Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. It might be the kettle boil of all three of those. But that's what Freemasonry essentially is realizing the architectural integrity that connects all three of those. And that what we call, you know, our 7-day week with work off on the weekend, and just how everything is constructed, and even just in the architecture of Washington, D.C. and the grids of the cities, is that we might feel like we grew up in an atheistic liberal city, but structurally we are Judeo-Christian Islam. Like, there are components of just things we can't even touch with our with our conscious mind, but that have formed us under principles that are rooted in these thought systems. And I was wondering,
right, it's not just the Abrahamic religions, like you said, the street design, like what David was saying before, you know, if it's like, if there really is some sort of, you know, magic squares into the layout of the east coast of the country or something like that. Is that what you mean? A less explicit version?
Yeah, I'm immediately having Scott Onstad's Secret in Plain Sight deal where he points out that fucking pretty much Washington, D.C. comes down to Albert Pike's burial site. I mean, that seemed like that was the center of his whole geometrical web thing. And it's interesting talking to him in person about that because he was expressing that was not him being like, oh, let's look at Albert Pike's burial site and see how everything relates to it. No, he's seeing how these relationships, and then he's like, well, what the fuck is this place? He looks it up after the fact, comes across that. I mean, that's a different type of insight. I mean,
yeah,
you're not going from point B to point A. You're coming from point A to point B. That's way more profound.
Yeah, he didn't set out to prove some Freemasonic agenda or something.
No, he stumbled across a Freemasonic agenda.
Yeah.
Apparently.
But okay, so now we kind of come back to this idea of, all right, so there's the institution is, Bill, I want you to kind of go back to that point. You were saying the institution is not only fundamentally racist and fundamentally Abrahamic and fundamentally, you know, Masonic or fundamentally this or, you know, all these sorts of things. Right, it's all these things sort of, that's the soil that it's growing out of, right? Like, we can't, even, I'm just sort of musing on something here. Like, we talk about the Buckminster Fuller idea of you don't redesign the system, you tear it down and build a completely new one, right?
Right.
And it's like, all right, that system doesn't work. Don't try and fix it. Don't try and amend it. Tear it down. Start over. But if the soil has this architecture in it, is that possible? I mean,
I don't know. I think McKenna would argue that, you know, to tear down and fix this thing, we'd have to go back to an orgiastic tribal kind of family dynamic that was corrupted when, you know, male paternity wanted to know who their children were, and ownership in a sense of that's my child and, you know, that's my wife or something. That just the fact that you live, that marriage is even like a thing. The fact that marriage is still a ritual that everyone pretty much agrees upon, that's boom, right there. The whole structure of everything is decided upon, you know, that Abrahamic and Judeo-Christian worldview, right? I mean, you'd have to destroy the institution of marriage. Who's going to do that, Alan Green? No one.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You're right. I don't know that I'm right. And I think this was something for me. I've had this conversation so many times, it's not even funny. But so you guys know, like, when I got married, I refused to get a government, like a marriage license, right? So there are people like within my family who say, well, then you're not really married. Because, like, apparently a government stamp means I'm really married. Then there's other people who are like, okay, we had a gathering of our friends and family, and we had a ceremony, we had all this sort of stuff, right? So then, like, there's that idea of we made it official, blah, blah, blah. There's all these sorts of different ideologies that go into that, but what's funny is as the same time I'm having this argument to say that this government certificate is not what a marriage even means, right? Like, a marriage means, in my mind, a marriage meant a commitment or a partnership and all these sorts of things. Something that I'm not really trying to tear down. Like, I totally get what you're saying. And, like, there's the ingrained ideology of what it means. But I am not opposed to voluntary partnerships or, you know, commitments and things like that. just the same way that we all have an agreement here to, like, hey, you know, whether it's we're agreeing to come together every Thursday and have a conversation, you know, whatever the fuck it is, voluntary associations and all those sorts of things. But while I was sort of having the argument of I don't need a marriage certificate to get married, is at the same time that all my gay friends are arguing, hey, we want to have the laws changed so that we can get married too. And I'm like, you're fighting the opposite of the fight I'm fighting. You want the piece of paper. You know, it's like, right. I want you to know that you have the authority, if you believe in yourself, that you have the authority to be with the person that you love and to make a commitment to somebody or to do whatever you want, whatever type of arrangement you want, whether that's saying, hey, we agree to split the bills and we could still go fuck other people, or you say, hey, we only fuck each other and, you know, I'll pay the bill, whatever the arrangement is, that's for you two people to figure out. And to see people sort of convinced that they need to argue in favor of further ingraining the institution into everything blows my mind. It's like, hey, we want to fight so that gays can be in the military. Like, really? Really? Like, I want to get rid of the fucking draft. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, things like that. Like, that's... I totally understand your point about Terrence McKenna. That's where I come at it, at least. I'm not trying to destroy quote-unquote marriage. I'm trying to have a conversation about what is that.
Yeah.
Expand the definition, right? So it's a language thing, and it's, yeah, the institutions, these... We perpetuate the systems themselves. We become the systems. It's so strange.
So, like literacy, right? Literacy is a program that we install, or at least typographic literacy. We install that program into our brains, and anyone who can read has that in their brain. How do you put, you know, how do you put the toothpaste back in the tube with literacy? You know what I mean? Yeah, how do you uninstall that program? It's essentially, it's a virus that you have for the rest of your life. That's what I think Burroughs was getting at when he went sci-fi and said, you know, literacy was a virus that came from outer space. The core of that concept is that literacy is that once you get it and once you can read letters, you're infected. You cannot get rid of it. And that, on some level, is the black iron prison of history. You will always have a narrative. You will always unconsciously see what is happening to you through the lens of reading about it. We live, like McLuhan says, as if we are looking in a rearview mirror. So how do we liberate ourselves from this prison or this virus that we unexpectedly, infected ourselves with? Well, I think when you look at something like Finnegan's Wake, if you look at that text, we can read, right? But there's something that repels our brain when we attempt to read that text. There's some canceling out process. There's some alchemical solvent in whatever that is that it almost is an antidote to literacy. It almost frees you up and allows you to see things not behind the bars of literacy again. I know that's such a huge leap. But it is a coincidentia oppositorum that to remove literacy from your brain's programming, one has to read a certain book. It just doesn't make any sense. I think that is the depth to which our culture is ingrained in the Abrahamic religions, is that you can't get the toothpaste back into the tube with that. We are... all of us, a bunch of Jews. We were born here. We're in it. It's just the construction of our reality. Something to that extent.
Yeah, and that's part of like, yeah. I don't think going back to like a tribal, everyone for themselves sort of hunter gatherer. I don't want to go back to hunter. I don't want to go back to living in caves. I mean, technology and this progression has a purpose, right? But it's always about how we're using.
Yo, but what if you could live in a cave with a laptop computer, man.
That's the thing. It's like or a very fashionable hobbit hole, right? I'll take the hobbit hole in the living. I mean, that seems very biodegradable and ethical, and like, hell, I can wrap my arms around that. So it's a merging of these two things, right? Like the cutting edge with the archaic. And so, yeah, McKenna gets criticized for saying, oh, he wants to go back to the Stone Age. No, he doesn't, you fucking idiot. He always talks about the merger. He was like one of the leading proponents of artificial intelligence, which I, you know, argue against, but like I respect his interest in it. And he was very much about that. So his ideas about that, I think, are very actually quite wise, and we would learn something about doing that. So again, it's that middle gray area. It's that compromise space. It's about synthesis. And this is all about synthesis, this work in progress. It's all about synthesis and iterative memory adding on to itself and becoming something hopefully better, if not the novel at the very least. So that's cool.
So how is a calculator not considered artificial intelligence?
Why? Because the humans operating it.
Well, I mean, I can ask you what's 275 divided by 4. I can ask a cat that, and I can ask, you know, someone who doesn't speak English, and I can ask the calculator. And the person who's going to, or the thing that's going to give me the answer first is the calculator.
Or the calculator.
Oh, me.
Yeah, the calculator didn't make us. We made the calculator. It's all about engineering in a lot of ways. I mean, that's the fundamental thing, okay? It's like engineering.
I guess I like your analogy here, but I'm curious if we consider the calculator simply a counting machine, like, because you, in the same way, I can ask, you know, I can ask you guys for gallons of oil, I can ask a cat for gallons of oil, or I can ask, like, you know, a drilling derrick in the middle of Texas for a few gallons of oil, you know. Does that mean it's artificially intelligent, or it's a machine that can do that function? I'm curious. Like,
well, I was going to jump off and then say, you can ask the I Ching a question, and I can ask you a question, and I can ask a cat a question, and I'm going to get, in quotes, answers from all three.
Dude, this is what it all kind of comes down to, and this is like what I was bringing up this whole phenomenon that I was coming across with Ira Levin. What's being communicated seems to be the idea of the double is all about artificial intelligence. Like, that's the whole point, and that's like why what's being communicated with Hal and what's being communicated with all of this stuff is that literally you know you're talking about the nature of Kundalini, that it's ego destroying. What are we talking about when we say ego? You have to qualify that, because there's I sense, the sense of I am. That's a classic definition of ego. That's absolutely essential. And that's not just a matter of localization. That's actually the energy flow. There's a very real reality to that. What isn't real is this fucking projected matrix thing, which might as well be artificial intelligence. You know, in the fucking original Pinocchio, you know, he kills Jiminy Cricket. You know,
it's more than once.
Yeah, it's his conscience. You know, and then the conscience comes back as a spirit, because you can't kill the conscience. That's
the cremation of care, right?
Yeah, exactly. totally. And that's completely what I'm saying. When they burn the effigy, it's the same thing as what the traditional burning of the Wicker Man is made to represent, is the artificial representational self, and that this is what needs to be burned to realize that there's no such thing as death. You know, like, that's the whole point. And that this is Kubrick's obsession with Pinocchio, which is very real. First time Mark LeClaire told me that, I was like, grain of salt. I'd never heard that before. But then I started thinking about it in terms of his film AI. But then even beyond that, I'm realizing, dude, that was there all along. He totally has a fucking Pinocchio obsession. And it's because of the implications. And this ties in with Moonchild. This ties in with the metaphysical golem. This premise is something that's getting reiterated over and over and over again. And I'm seeing a running theme here. And that's what most of the synchronicities that we've been coming across ultimately seem to relate to, this one point of what artificial intelligence actually entails. And the fact that there's two of us here. There's us, there's our I sense, and then there's the double. And that the double needs to be destroyed in order for something real to be born.
Well, and I don't know. Destroying it, right? What does that mean? I think it means recognizing that that's not us. We're trying to create. I say argue against artificial intelligence. That's not completely correct. I mean, it's like we're moving in that direction, but also I think there's hard limits on it. We can't recreate the human. The human is a unique, natural thing. And I think there's this current of artificial intelligence culture that is obsessed with removing ourselves from the human experience and becoming robots and shit. And I don't want that. And I know that's like hard line on my end, but that's like, I don't like that.
There's a distinction, and it's not, it's what the nature of what we're relating to generally, what the general consensus amongst what artificial intelligence entails expressing the same principal dynamics as a deeper artificial intelligence, which really is the substitute matrix projected fucking thing that's, you know, being held in place through consensus belief that doesn't actually have any independent reality of its own. That there's this idea of the nullification of the Kleepo, where you're not actually you say destroy. But it's not really that they're getting destroyed. It's just that their whatever is essential in them continues on. Whatever is being projected and enforced through the will, that's bound to go. That's the whole point.
Right. Well, we're trying to make like a crude mirror, right? And then we try to shatter the mirror, maybe to like, I don't know, get a better perception of ourselves by looking inward or something. I don't know. I play with that idea, but yeah, not to argue the point. So I concede that what you're saying there, it's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's helped a lot in trying to kind of assess what's being communicated in a lot of these particular artistic expressions that I've been fucking obsessing over. What is the line that's being communicated over and over and over again? And artificial intelligence seems to be the key component. And what is it that an intelligence entails, you know? If you're talking about entities, it's very misleading, because if you're talking about spiritual entities and this and that, it's like, well, what are we really talking about other than just intelligences? Nature has all kinds of intelligences that are perpetuated almost on their own, practically. And then there's intelligences that are literally like asserted and manifested through the power of our will, you know? It's just, I think you guys get where I'm going with that.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
For what it's worth, I never enjoyed the Pinocchio Disney cartoon when I was a kid, and I assumed that I hated Pinocchio, but for whatever reason, when did I write Look at All the Happy Creatures, 2009, so probably like 2008 or so, I actually read the Pinocchio book that you're referring to, where he kills Jiminy Cricket.
Mm-hmm.
I read it for the first time then, and man, is that an incredible book.
Totally.
And I can't recommend that. And that, like, it's so fucking, I could not believe how good it was. So yeah, I wouldn't question why Kirk would be in love with it.
Right, and it, in the way that it relates to the Moonchild symbolism is really ridiculous. I didn't get the full communication of that until just recently.
So, you know what's crazy? Just real quick about the double in Kubrick and mm-hmm. his AI movie being directed by another person, directed by Steven Spielberg. I just like the fact that the person was named Steven, you know, with the connection to Joyce and Steven Dedalus.
Oh, okay.
Building better wings. It just, I'm sure that would not have been lost on Kubrick at all.
But, you know, there's something else here, right? So, again, the opposite is always inherent in the opposite. So we have Kubrick, you know, did he make The Shining about the Holocaust, et cetera, right? You have Steven Spielberg with Schindler's List and all that sort of stuff. So you have the AI getting hand. So in 2001, he attributes AI to IBM, the machinery behind the Holocaust.
Right.
And then, so who ends up making Kubrick's AI, but the SS, Steven Spielberg.
Right.
Is sort of hilarious in and of itself.
Totally.
But, there's something, I'm just going to throw it out there because this is my context for this. Bill, you asked about asking the I Ching. We mentioned Andras's, we're all a bunch of Jews, blah, blah, blah. Ezra and Andras are apparently recording something for Ezra's next show tonight. And they're apparently doing something with Radio 8 Ball in it, because Ezra sent me an email saying, hey, if you have a question, we're going to be doing something tonight. So I want to turn the conversation there in 1 second, but first, do you realize, here's another just sort of, hey, did you realize, David, you were at the Olympia Sync Summit. What was the first question to the Radio 8 Ball show? Do you remember what the first question was? What is real? So we have the first question being, what is real? We have Pinocchio being like wanting to be a real boy, and what does that even mean? And then there's the obvious sort of play on Israel, is real, and which is sort of what came out of it. It's just, there's a whole host of things bubbling under the surface here for me. In sort of realizing the sinks of our own actions are pretty hilarious. But I know everyone's got to get going soon. I'm going to talk to Ezra. I don't know if we still have time to get a question in, but I'm curious if you could ask a question to the I Ching, to the cat, to the oil derrick, or to Radio 8 Ball, what would it be?
What do other planets think of planet Earth? I mean, that's what everyone wants to know. Everyone out there doing their thing, when they dream about Earth, and they, you know, what do they think about us?
Bunch of dicks.
You got that beautiful place. What are you doing? Come on, snap
out. Come
on,
guys. What is this shit?
David, what about you?
Oh, boy. I ask, every time this question's asked, I have an immediate question pop in my mind, and it's the same one I asked the first time, or that I got to ask it something, which is, how am I not myself? And although I would probably spell not K-N-O-T. I don't know. That's
John, what about you?
Oh, a question I would have?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think I'll reiterate Misty Greer's question, which I think was, what is the Q, or what is quintessence? I think that was it.
Good one.
Okay. I guess we're gonna wind down here.
Yeah.
This was pretty fucking awesome.
Totally.
So
this was fun.
Totally fun, dude. Good idea.
This is pretty epic. This is very long.
Woo! 100, baby.
Longest in a while. Yeah, 100. This was an appropriate 100.
Fucking awesome.
Everybody go see Birdman.
Okay, you got it. I'll always be a word.
Yeah,
man.
Dude.
Better
no, we'll
Birdman.
Fucking see Birdman.
Crowley.
Oh, man. So tasty.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
So is it a Crowley reference? Is that why?
I ain't saying shit. I didn't know anything about the movie. I just knew the director. I just woke up, ran into the theater, and I just got slapped up the head, man. It's happening.
Very close friend of mine recommended it extremely highly, and so I've been meaning to see it anyway. So yeah, I'll go watch that soon.
So this is again one of the abysmal things of where I'm living right now. So yeah. I thought the closest theater to me, when I looked it up, I thought it was an hour away. It's actually closer to 2 hours away.
Get the fuck out of here!
Wow, dude.
No.
I thought Asheville had like a scene. They don't have a.
I'm not in Asheville. Number one.
Okay.
I'm in fucking Virginia. So, yeah.
In the boonies, apparently, because fucking 2 hours is long for me. Like, the movie theaters are.
I have to,
they're
I have
everywhere,
to,
man.
I have to, no, there's plenty of movie theaters. It's not. It doesn't have a wide release. The
I get you.
Oh, it's not playing there. Okay.
Okay.
No, the movie has a limited release. So the closest city in which it is playing is in Richmond, Virginia.
Jesus. Oh, damn.
So.
Oh, wow.
All right.
I mean, maybe if I wait a few more weeks, maybe it'll get a wider release, but.
I really
go
have
ahead.
To go, you guys. So.
Yeah, all right.
All right, David. See you later, man.
Later, David.
Thank you. Bye. All
right, guys. We're going to jump off here, too?
Yeah, we can jump off. It's cool.
Yeah.
All right, later, guys.
Have a good
Great
one,
to
all right?
Great talking to you guys.
Great talking to you both. And thank you, John and David. Pleasure. Real nice. Thanks, man.
Same. Later. See ya.